Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Friday regular. And I'm starting out without muting my Zoom. That's right, Alex Forfar. I don't care. We're playing some punk music, and that's punk. That's what the new punk is. It's not muting your Zoom when you're told to. It doesn't matter. Good morning. Friday. Which basically just means cheat meals for me. Like, it's like, yes! Cheat meal time! Woo!
What's your go-to cheat meal?
Go-to cheat meal? I don't really have a go-to cheat meal.
But what's on the docket today, then?
I really think that I'm going to fire up some Indian food today.
Oh, that's such a good one. What a comfort food.
Yeah, this just feels like a double dip in a curry situation.
It's a bit cold out, so it warms your soul.
Oh, yeah.
Even at 6:01 a.m., I could go for some Indian food.
Yeah. No, that's the thing is, okay, this is the true trick to the great cheat meal. And everyone's going to say, no duh. The true trick is to get something that carries over the next day.
Of course.
That's the full trick to this sucker is making sure you get something. And like Indian food, underrated, carry over to the next day, no sweat, no problem, no drop off, right? No drop off.
Sushi, on the other hand, you can't. You make a mountain that night and you get you eat till you're in a food coma and that's it. You're not eating it tomorrow.
The problem I have is I always get the extra sushi for the next day. Like, I always get the extra couple rolls, and I go, oh, the rolls are for tomorrow. The sashimi is for today. The rolls are for tomorrow. But, yeah, you're right. It never holds up quite the same.
No,
the rice
doesn't.
Just gets in the fridge. It's and then you're eating it, and you're like, why did I do this? This wasn't worth it. This was a mistake. but sushi, if we're talking about my number one, I don't even count sushi as a cheat meal. Because in my brain, I'm like, sushi is healthy. It's just fish.
Yeah, there's like cucumbers.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't care how much spicy mayo is on this. Like, I don't care how much rice. I don't care
if they deep fry the toppings.
Nope.
That's fine.
Nope. I don't care. Yeah, I get some sashimi. And I'm like, this is healthy. And then I just decide the rest of the – I order so much sushi always. It comes with a free salad I never eat, but it's there for aesthetics. So
the
healthy.
Worst is when you order so much sushi and they give you like four sets of chopsticks and you're like, it's just me, buddy. It's just me, okay? It's don't shame me. You're like, I'm having a little event and then you go home and you eat it alone and you're out.
I know. I've never once ordered sushi where it's just been me and I've only gotten one set of chopsticks. Where they're like, this is obviously just you alone, one person. Here's just one set. Ever. Not one time. The only thing I've ever gotten is sometimes they don't include them, which is the worst. Because you don't hit the include cutlery. But it's like, that's the one spot when you order sushi. It's like, yeah, but that's BS. When you order sushi, that's different cutlery, all right? Like, give me the chopsticks.
You're the type of guy that I would actually
pick. You're oddly quiet.
His own set of chopsticks. Like, you have your own, like...
No.
Like, it has your name
metal
engraved in them. They're like a nice, like, a bone color.
They're
a type of stone hand engraved with your initials. Next Christmas.
I gotta tell you. Now I want that. Now I want that. Now if I win some bets this weekend, I might treat myself to some bone chopsticks. That sounds really good.
Yeah, we talked the other week about people like pool sharks who show up at their own queue and they
that's
little
what
case
I thought too.
And pull it out and screw it together. This is gonna be you. You're gonna roll up to the all you can eat sushi spot, pull out of your back pocket your little case. Open it up, and it's JD's chopsticks inside?
Well, the bigger... I think the problem with it, really, is that you have a date. You have somebody over, and you order sushi, and you pull out your own chopsticks. I feel like that goes in the minus column. That feels like something that you tell your friends. Like, your friend who... You know, only goes out with guys who sing songs for her, right? Like the custom-made song girl. Yeah. That I feel like if I went on a date with her and she was like, Ailish, here's the scouting report. He brought out his own chopsticks made of bones.
Red flag.
Yeah, that would be a thing. That would end up being a thing. So, yeah, cheat meal night, beers night. Oh, yeah. Like Friday regular. Because now I think we have Baby Friday Friday regular and Friday senior, and then Sunday is Grandpa Friday, which is just, you know, I kind of like rebranding Sunday as Grandpa Friday. Makes it way, it's like takes away the scaries a little bit, makes it less harmful. You know, maybe you can learn something from Sunday.
Hmm. My issue here is that the extension of all of this is we now have day names for everything except for Tuesday. Like Monday, Tuesday Monday is on its own. Like every Monday is a self-contained brand. Wednesday's got the hump day, and then obviously the sequence of the whole Friday family, Thursday to Sunday. Poor Tuesday.
Tuesday just sucks.
Yeah. There's nothing about Tuesday except for the texts. And sometimes listeners, you don't even send in good texts. No. You got to do better, okay? Some days you're really slacking. You're supposed to know what it is. I'm supposed to be getting good DMs, and we're supposed to be getting good texts. And some days it's just you're slacking, all right? So if you really want Tuesdays to be popping, that's on you. That's on you, the listeners of this show. Who? What did we've never really come up still with the other than Ailish's Simps. We have no branding.
We never really figured out a name for them. You're right.
Yeah, like when I had Good Show, it was the Good People. When I had Free Association, it was the Associates. We need something for the Fan Morning Show still to this day, and it can't just be all Simps.
So text that in.
We already have. There are a lot of Simps, though. There are a lot of Simps. You know what my favorite thing is like when you get people calling themselves the Simps to me, in when I get messages from some people, they're like, normally I'm a Simp for Ailish. I'm like, okay, good way to start this message. Too. I'm going to read this now. this is a good way for me to start this. Bad ways is usually when it's insults directed at me early in the morning. Okay, so weekend.
Anyway.
Friday senior, Saturday, loaded. Grandpa Friday, Sunday, loaded. What a sports weekend. Let's start with this today. We did this a couple weeks ago, and I kind of like it as a framework for going into busy weekends right now, which is give me the narrative that you see shaping that you are most interested in this weekend. Give me the narrative in the weekend that you're most interested in. Who wants to go first?
Me.
All right.
This one should surprise everybody.
Yeah.
Bills Chiefs, baby.
Yeah, I know.
I just cannot think of a better matchup. Honestly, it feels like a Super Bowl in itself. And there's just so much intensity coming into this. The Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes showdown has like the biggest narrative swing, I think, for Josh Allen, especially if he has a chance to beat Patrick Mahomes and to kind of put a staple on this season of him having this emergence to be a top one or two quarterback in the league. I think it'll really put the league on notice about, you know, the Bills are kind of sleepy. They're up in the North. Nobody thinks about them until they make these big playoff pushes and until Josh Allen breaks every record in the book. But I think that if he can have even a small ounce of the game that he had last time. I'm aware that he can't break all those records again. That would be crazy. But I really do think that this game versus Mahomes and the Chiefs and, you know, a matchup, a rematch for the ages, I honestly can't wait. Like, I wish it was already, what did we say, Grandpa Friday? Because that will be the biggest thing that I'll be itching to watch all weekend. And I think a lot of people are in the same boat. It's definitely the number one game of the weekend to watch. For me, it's even an added piece of excitement. I don't feel the anxiety I felt last time. You know, I feel like this is such an opportunity for the Bills, and I think that they have the upper hand, the momentum coming in. We're going to talk to Charles, our guy at 7, who was there on the weekend. I can't wait to get his takes on like how the energy felt and what the team put out in front of him, because that's the biggest narrative to me this weekend. I truly cannot wait.
Yeah, to me, the narrative in this game, it's they're competing narratives. It's did the Bills design their team? Was the Bills design a success? Mm-hmm. Because this entire team was designed to beat the Chiefs. The defense is constructed to beat Patrick Mahomes and co. And that was the goal of last year, was get a better pass rush and make sure you have a solid secondary. And the Bills don't have Tre'Davious White still. He's been hurt for weeks. But the secondary hasn't really suffered. And if you really think about it, the safeties have become the identity of this defense. Maybe they always were. Maybe the safeties of this team were always the defensive identity. But those two guys, when they were pissy at their podium, ever since then have stepped up and been incredible. And if they can force a turnover against Patrick Mahomes, right, you can get home. You can get a couple of sacks. You can force him into a mistake downfield that he was making earlier this season. Poyer ends up with a big pick, right? Did you see the Poyer? I think I sent it to you, Ailish. Him doing the pregame pump-up speech.
Oh.
The legacy dies tonight, or their era ends
incredible tonight.
Is I
need to make that my alarm in the morning. Like, you wake up and you want to run through a brick wall. That was they have it all. They have the team dynamic. They have the leadership. They have the all-star power. They have the fan base. Like, they have, this is like the stars aligning for the Buffalo Bills if they can overcome Patrick Mahomes this weekend.
I totally agree. And that's it, is you built your team to beat Patrick Mahomes. You got a quarterback who's an MVP caliber quarterback, who's the best rushing QB in the NFL right now. I'm sorry to Lamar Jackson. Sorry, Mr. Jackson. But it's Josh Allen. The stats bear that out. The eye test bears that out. That's the guy. Can he just break this Chiefs defense down? Can he be a one-man wrecking crew again? Can he have the weapons that can keep up with the Chiefs? And did you design your team correctly? Are you going to become the Super Bowl champion favorites? Because you beat the Chiefs and that's what happens. Versus the Chiefs narrative, which is, oh, actually, don't ever judge us on the regular season again. We are now the LeBron James flip the switch team of the NFL, where if you spend any more time discussing our slumps, whatever, during the regular season, you will look like a fool. That it's the Chiefs in the regular season might replace Tom Brady in the regular season, where you go, hey, is Tom Brady too old now? Or when is Tom Brady doing that projection? And you look like an idiot year in, year out. The Chiefs obviously are still the team to go through. And if the Bills are who they think, I think they are, I think they're going to kick the crap out of the Chiefs this weekend. And I think that we might end up saying the opposite, which is, oh, actually, maybe the Chiefs should be a little bit more refined in the regular season. Maybe this has taken a toll on them. Maybe they've gone too far. Blake, how do you feel about this game? Narrative from this game.
Yeah, I think it's a huge one. I think the point about the Chiefs being into Brady Patriots territory of, like, nothing we do matters until the playoffs. We're so self-assured. We're so confident in what we do that you can't really take us week to week. Now, that's a tough thing for the league in general. It's also just a tough thing, like, that's a slippery thing to analyze on, right? Like, say they steamroll the Bills and we go into next year and the Chiefs are bad and we don't catch reasons they're falling off because we're like, oh, they'll do it in the playoffs. But I think that's huge. It's obviously a huge Josh Allen game. It's obviously a huge Ailish game to see if the Bills can win her back from the clutches of the Patriots. It's a huge Ariel game. We'll talk to him about his Bills fandom later. I just think it's cool. I think it's like very clearly the most intriguing game on the slate from both a tactical standpoint and how good is this game going to be. And I don't really have like a great narrative underlying that excitement other than like this is going to be a really good football game. And I think, you know, if there's a narrative that I feel on the NFL side this weekend, it's that I kind of think the divisional weekend is the best NFL weekend of the season. Like, because you get four games, because we're down to very good teams, because you get 2 days of staggered games. Obviously wildcard weekend you get more games, but the top teams aren't in it.
I think
this is the best
NFL.
There's
so many blowouts. Yeah.
See, I think it goes championship weekend is the best because you have the two best teams, right? You just get these two premier games where they're in their own conferences. And I kind of wish that we were just a little bit more European about it, where that mattered a bit more than the Super Bowl, you know, that we gave a little bit more credit to the team that won their league, essentially, right? I want to know where Blake's brain went when I said more European about it, because I think that could go in a lot of different ways.
No, I went right to the Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the one where Mac dies and Dennis gets the new European roommate. European.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah, that's I'm trying to think about who that would be in the NFL. But yeah, that I've always cared a lot about championship weekend, but divisional weekend is right there. It's always the, hey, you get the extra two games versus you get the creme de la creme game. But they're both just insanely good. This is the gift and the curse of the NFL season, is you get these incredible gifts, which are these next 2 weekends, and then all of a sudden it goes away. And you get that bye week before the Super Bowl where you're reminded what life without football is like after living with it for months. And just the darkness. The darkness.
It's so cold.
I know. It's so cold. But the only upshot is that you're close to March Madness now. You know, you realize, okay, you just have to have enough rations to get to March Madness. Like, put the grain in the silo.
After losing one on a buzzer beater last night, I'm not ready for March Madness yet. My poor Boilermakers.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's stupid Boilermakers, idiots, college kids. I'm like Penny Hardaway right now. Like, if you saw him at the podium, we should get that clip maybe coming in where he's like, I put too much work into this to be disrespected this way. That's how I think Blake felt when the Boilermakers lost on a buzzer beater. Yes, I think that's very strong. I think the NFL is chock full of narratives. So maybe, do you have, Blake, do you have another NFL narrative that you care about going into this weekend, or Ailish, because I'll flip it to a different sport if you don't want to do more football here.
Yeah, I would say the only, and we're going to talk a lot of football throughout the show, so don't think I'm minimizing this. The only other one for me that's really high on my radar is, I think this is a really big Joe Burrow week. I think this is a big, hey, is Joe Burrow joining that, like firmly joining that second tier class of quarterback, like we talked with Ben about earlier in this week. Like, this is a guy who the volume's obviously there, you know, sixth in the NFL in passing yards, top eight fantasy quarterback, all that stuff. But to string together back-to-back statement playoff, well, last week wasn't really like a statement, but if they knock off the number one seed, a team that's going to try to control that game with the run the entire time, I think it's a big Joe Burrow. I guess on the other side, it's a huge Derrick Henry game too, because if he comes back after half a missed season and just runs all over Cincinnati like he was doing to everyone early in the season, maybe next year we're revisiting this whole non-quarterbacks can't win an MVP thing.
What I find interesting about this one is if they're able to beat the Titans, if you're asking me who do you think cannot win the Super Bowl this year, I'm starting with the Bengals, right? Their defense is just, it's not good. Their line play on both sides of the ball is arguably the worst out of all teams left in the playoffs. They're just not there. I don't believe that they're there. If they ended up winning a Super Bowl, it would truly be a incredible underdog story, right? It would be even bigger than when the Giants went in as the final seed, went and won a bunch of road games, and then beat the Patriots. I really believe that. They're just not ready. If Joe Burrow wins this game, though, Blake, you're right. I think what it means is going into next season, we view that team as an automatic Super Bowl contender because of where we place Joe Burrow. We're saying, oh, you know what? If they beat the Titans, they're doing it because Burrow and Chase put up 30 points, right? Something along those lines. I'm guessing that's probably the most likely game script for them to win. That's the most likely way for them to win. Those two enter the season in that pantheon, like right below a Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill / Kelsey, that they're probably right there. That it becomes more than just a fantasy story. It becomes more than just a plucky, this is where all of a sudden expectations change in Cincinnati. And I think conversely with the Titans is if they steamroll that team, then all of a sudden they become the, wow, you were the disrespected team, and everyone should be on high alert and everyone should be afraid of them. Because they can't control the clock against, we're all doing this thing, and I think it's fair in this moment right now of Chiefs Bills winner goes to the Super Bowl. And I can tell you right now that if the Titans look awesome, if they look refreshed from that week, if Derrick Henry comes back after, 9 weeks off and doesn't look like just a decoy, he actually looks like rolling downhill Derrick Henry, who picks up 100 yards in that game, and Tannehill has clutch plays. I was listening to something last night. I can't remember what it was, or maybe I was just reading an article. But if you look at Ryan Tannehill's place in like Pro Football Focus, like top quarterbacks in the NFL, his last 3 seasons he's been top 10. So, a little bit of a disrespected guy. I really believe that. And because we've done things like, oh, it was an Arthur Smith creation. Oh, it's just lucky because the red zone. Oh, it's because it's Derrick Henry. And pretty routinely, when this guy has some weapons, he uses them to his advantage. And if we're doing the thing of like, oh, well, the Niners could win with Jimmy Garoppolo, I think that Ryan Tannehill is better than Jimmy Garoppolo. And I don't think their run game is better, but I think that he is a much better quarterback who takes advantage of his weapons, who has a pretty similar team. So why can't the Titans win? So, yeah, I do think that we're sleeping on that game a little bit. And it's mostly because, again, the Titans jersey is so ugly. So it's your own fault, Titans. I'm going to move on to the Leafs. The narrative I care about the most this weekend, outside of football, I'll be honest, is just how the Leafs respond to Sheldon Keefe's comments. I think it's going to be really fascinating. If the Leafs lay an egg on Saturday night, it's going to be a massive story that's going to resonate throughout the entire week. If they respond, we might undercut it a little bit with they played the Islanders, but this is a game that has always been chock full of narratives because it's always been Lou Lamoriello versus Kyle Dubas and whether the Leafs made the right choice with who's running this organization and who's running this core. If Lou had been here, would the young guys have had much better contracts, and would that have freed up more room down the roster for better depth and a better blue line, for example? And that's sort of what we're leading into here. Is it's kind of a narrative Super Bowl for the Leafs, where if they lay an egg, we're going to say, uh-oh, they didn't respond to their head coach. They might be in a bad spot here. And then we're doing the same thing all over again, where it's the Stars got paid too much, and that's why the blue line stinks. And had Lou been here, like he did it in the Islanders, or with the Islanders, then they'd have a better blue line, and maybe the team would be tougher, and maybe they'd be more mature, and maybe they'd be more accountable, and blah, 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 blah. So, sneakily, a team against a crappy Islanders team that has been awful this season and beat up this season is suddenly very big.
So I want to ask you this. I want to ask Steve Dangle it a little later when we have him on at 8 o'clock as well. And hey, if you're listening, 590-590, text us your answer to this as well. The Islanders are bad. So what constitutes a good win for the Leafs this weekend? Like, what are you looking for from that game from an outcome standpoint? Because, you know, it could very easily pivot quickly back to, well, you're beating bad teams. So if they come in and they beat the brakes off the Islanders and it's 5-1, you know, that's going to look fine. I don't know that anyone's going to be celebrating. And then the other end of it is, you know, if it's a Coyotes game where you dominate a bad team but get goal lead, you know, that's a whole different thing. So what constitutes a good win against the Islanders on Saturday, given where the Leafs are?
I think the biggest thing that they need to start with is playing full 60 minutes. They haven't been able to string that together in quite a while, where they dominate for 60 minutes. They beat the Rangers in the first period handedly. Where were they in the second period? Right? And then they come back in the third and they have to make this scramble attempt to come back. And I think that that is becoming a little bit of the trend that we're seeing, a big start or, you know, controlling the play at least in the beginning and then falling off. So playing a consistent 60 minutes is number one for me. Number two would be that the All-Stars continue to be the All-Stars. It's been great to have Mitch Marner back. He's been one of the best players since his return. I'd like to see that continue and him to be able to lift up a Tavares and a Nylander and a Matthews to be the stars. I think the narrative this weekend going in is you got to dominate this team. So who better than the core four to be the best four players on the ice? Mikheyev has been great. So Engvall had one of his best games, but those aren't the people that are going to be the narrative shifters come to playoffs. It's going to be that the core four stand up and have a huge game when their backs are against the wall. Those are the two things I would say would constitute a great game for the Maple Leafs and obviously to win.
So I'll be honest. I think they're in a really tough spot, Blake, when it comes to that, because one, the Islanders are the type of team that I don't expect to get a ton of volume from. So I don't think that if Jack Campbell's in net, he's going to get tested. I'm not really sure how much of a test there is going to be or how much stress there is going to be on that inexperienced and under-talented blue line, right? So really, yeah, the only bar for success is sort of what Ailish just outlined, which is three complete periods of domination, which they have shown in the past, right? But ultimately, it is still hockey, and a team like the Islanders, you would expect a pretty tough punch from. We talked to, how many times do we have to talk to people to realize that the Islanders are going to get up for a game on Hockey Night in Canada, even in a sleepy season, that this is going to be one where they are invested in, that they are going to bring a solid punch. So if just if the Leafs end up getting win, this should still be a quality win, right? The Islanders are a proud team. They're not the best version of themselves this year. They've been very beat up this year, but they can give you a good punch on any given night. And the only way we're going to look at this is if we say, wow, what is good? The Leafs kick their ass. But then, if they do kick their ass and they don't give up a ton of shots, we're going to say, well, they didn't really test that blue line. Well, they didn't really test Jack Campbell. And so, it's a tough one for me. It really is. Like, what happens? You end up getting a lot of shots on Jack, and he makes a lot of saves, and he's regular Jack Campbell. And then we do the, why did they give up so many shots on Jack? Like, I just think that the Leafs are in a very precarious position right now when it comes to narratives, right? And that's why they sort of need the dominant effort more from the vantage point of, I don't want to have the discussions about the potential of the coach losing the room a little bit, right? Because a lot of people around hockey, and I've texted a few people too, they thought Keefe's words were super harsh. And calling NHL players soft is not something that is always received with, well, we need to bounce back and show him. It sometimes can be received the other way. Soft and purposeless was a weighty, weighty, weighty thing, right? Like, and we know how these things can go. Like Brian Burke with the 13-wheeler off the cliff and how those things can stick. And all of a sudden now, I don't know, that's just, I feel like that one can go either way. All I will say is I have a video that I put up on Instagram last night, and it's kind of counterintuitive with all this stuff, which is, hey, listen, the Leafs are making the playoffs. That's going to happen here, right? It's going to take some type of epic disaster for them not to make it. There's four teams in their division, and they're all very, very good. It's mostly about where those four teams are going to slot. I don't expect the Detroit Red Wings to jump over the Leafs in the playoff standings, right? Again, look at where the Leafs are right now. They're very high up. They win their next four games, and despite being in the same division as a Panthers team that's won 8 of their last 10, Tampa has won 4 straight. Florida has won 8 of their last 10. I think Boston has won 8 of their last 10. The Leafs win their next 4, and they're first in the division. Like, that's how good this season has been for them. It's kind of comical to some extent that we're this worried about a small stretch of games that they've mostly won, and that really this is just playoffs. So make sure you go to Instagram. Make sure you watch Take It or Leave It this week. Make sure you like it and share it and leave a comment in the comment section. All those things help. But yeah, it will be a big narrative thing for the Leafs because that is this market. But I am a little bit reassured by this. This isn't the stretch that I really view matters. This just isn't it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Atlantic Division standings are a good reminder, by the way, that we should at this point be looking at standings by points percentage, not necessarily just points. Like the way the schedule has been dramatically shuffled around this year, like
that's what I do.
Yeah, like the Leafs have played way fewer games than Tampa Bay and Florida. Detroit looks nominally like they're a threat, but the drop off in points percentage is so dramatic that Detroit's not projecting to be a threat at all. So that's just a reminder, points alone, especially as the schedule gets, like, you look at the Eastern Division, there's a 9-game gap between some teams in games played. So just keep an eye on that. Can I do a quick one before we take a break for the A-list?
Of course. Go ahead.
So mine, other than the ones we've already talked about, we got a heavyweight title fight in the UFC this weekend.
Thank you.
UFC
I'm glad
270,
you went through this.
Francis Ngannou against Cyril Gane. Formerly Cyril Gane, but he wants to do the Gane thing now because it sounds like Bane.
Oh. I was just going to say, like, what? Since when is that a thing? He's Cyril Gane.
He said it sometime in 2021. He said he's okay with people pronouncing it Gane because it sounds like Bane from Batman. It's badass.
You're French. No, you're not going to be badass.
We got a heavyweight title fight. We got a full pro wrestling build where they're former teammates who are, you know, maybe taking veiled shots and ignoring each other. We've got one guy who the company is allegedly more invested in because he's, you know, on the come up in Gane. And then on the other side, Ngannou is, you know, holding the UFC's feet over the fire contractually, saying, this is the last time I'll fight for this kind of money. If I beat your young, undefeated prospect, we're going to have to talk differently about this championship clause and contracts and where I stand in the UFC. And obviously, Dana White's saying and doing a bunch of Dana White stuff around that. But even if you leave all that ancillary stuff aside, we got two heavyweights who love to stand up and throw. This is going to be a monster fight. The line has swung all over the place in the lead up to this. I'm really excited. And look, Mourinho and Figueiredo is going to be a good fight too. And I think there's a lot there we can unpack with Ariel later and maybe even in the wake and rake. But we got a heavyweight title fight of two big punchers. That's a big one for me.
It is. You know, again, narrative-wise, I'm not as interested in the fight as I am the fallout.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, the fight is interesting.
If Ngannou wins.
Either way. If Ngannou wins, that's the bigger one. But because if Ngannou loses, he's gone. He's going to go fight for some other promotion. He might end up having some kind of a boxing career. I don't know, really. Like, he might end up in one of those freak show side attraction boxing events.
He should fight the whole Paul family at once.
God, would I pay. God, would I pay to see it. It's just like that would be the event. Is this guy, he's only allowed to throw a certain amount of punches too, right? Like he gets a punch limit of what he's able to do. Ngannou was, to me, a guy who was starting to build a brand that was bigger than just a UFC fighter. Like, Ciryl Gane right now, to me, is your stereotypical UFC fighter, where I don't know him from Adam. I watch the UFC a lot. He doesn't move me in any way. He's had some impressive wins. He doesn't move me in any way. He's not an interesting person. Watching these two guys try to do their little podium bits has been cringeworthy, painful. Like, they're not personalities. The thing with Francis is that he is one of the most physically imposing champions that you can possibly have. He looks like he's built out of granite, and all of his highlights are, he has changed people's lives forever. Like, he's connected with punches that changes you forever. Those aren't just knockouts. Those are, I'm worried about what you're going to look like when you turn 45. You know, like, I'm worried what's going to happen to you when you're 50 and you have to take care of your family. Like, Francis Ngannou fights are a real, like, remember when was it Derrick Rose that wouldn't come back early enough? And he said, I have to worry about being able to walk my daughter down the aisle someday. Like, that's the kind of calculation you have to be making when you take a Francis Ngannou fight. If Francis wins, it's probably going to be via spectacular knockout again, which will now put him back at the top of the pile of UFC fighters that you want to watch, UFC fighters that you are most interested in, that you know who they are, and that you will pay to watch a pay-per-view. The problem is that pay-per-view prices are going up. ESPN and Dana White are kind of disconnected. It is no longer the old model where ESPN looks at this as, we really need to raise up stars, or the UFC really needs to raise up stars. It has pretty much been take it or leave it. Take it or leave it. You can either get paid what the UFC pays you, or you can go out in the wilderness and you can go do some WWE and show up there for a couple of fights and suck at wrestling and then disappear. You can go try to fight at Bellator. You can go and join a boxing card somewhere. You can do a thriller fight, whatever you want to do, but that's what we're offering you. This is the contract. We are not wiggling on it. I wonder if Francis winning is actually going to spark up a little bit more pressure on ESPN and the UFC. Because the UFC has something called a championship clause. If Francis loses, his contract is up. If Francis wins, it's basically a franchise tag where the UFC gets to go, no, we still control your rights because you are a champion here, and you are not going to get paid anything even within the stratosphere of what you were currently worth. And it is going to create a holdout between the UFC's maybe most visible champion. Like, who is bigger for the UFC if Francis Ngannou wins than Francis Ngannou? Someone who has come from nothing, right? Who is very much, like, if we're going to do, like, the labor versus management thing, Francis Ngannou's story is about as powerful as anybody's in the UFC. There's zero, you know, privilege or money or things in the background of this. I just wonder if we're going to start talking about the UFC in a different light of, you know what? Maybe Dana White going to podiums and saying Francis Ngannou has a bunch of, I don't want to paraphrase, but essentially he's called out Francis Ngannou's camp, saying he's giving him bad advice. And Francis Ngannou's making $500,000 a fight, $600,000 a fight, which is pretty aggressively bad given who Francis Ngannou is. We have all the stuff with Jake Paul where it's been simmering and he's been throwing jabs at the UFC and bringing up how much that they don't pay their fighters, they don't take care of their fighters, that there needs to be fighter reform. I've always wondered, what the hell is it going to take for the UFC to have this? What's it going to take for fans to actually have meaningful pressure towards the UFC? How could ESPN actually get involved in this, right? Like, when does it become a pressure point to ESPN? And I feel like Francis is one of these places. If nothing moves off of Francis, then I just don't see it ever moving. Because it's a rarity where you get a heavyweight champion who looks like he does, who has a contract status like he does, who's in the prime of his career like he is. Because, like, we never wanted to cheer for Jon Jones, right? He's such a bad guy that when we missed out on Jon Jones fights, we were kind of like, yeah, but also, yeah, it just, he's doing so many bad things that, how am I supposed to get behind this? How am I really supposed to be upset about missing out on John? And then what? We lost Henry Cejudo, who, I'm as big a UFC fan as it gets. I don't care about Henry Cejudo fights. Boring. Too small. you know? Francis Ngannou matters. Francis Ngannou is a heavyweight champion. This should matter to the UFC. This should matter to fans.
Yeah, a little context. So 13 UFC fights, including a championship title fight loss, a championship title fight win, and 6 performance of the night bonuses, and his career earnings are about $2.5 million.
Yeah.
Biggest payouts, $580K he got for the Stipe fight. Obviously, that's a nice number, but compared to what this guy's bringing
that's
in.
Dog. That's dog.
Yeah,
that's
I just nothing. Mean it's a nice number compared to what you're making on the way up when he started out fighting
that is
for
$20K. Pathetic. Yeah. That is pathetic. That is pathetic. Pathetic, pathetic, pathetic. And anybody's $2.5 million. You wouldn't fight Francis Ngannou for $2.5 million, okay? And if you would, then you're just basically – you're passing it on to your family, all right? You're making that decision that your life is only worth $2.5 million.
Yeah,
you don't have good life insurance.
Over 7 years of fighting in the UFC.
No, I know. So, it's insane. It's so horrible.
He's got a good claim here, and he's got some real leverage if he wins this fight. Let's take a break. Let's do the A-list when we come back. No better fit for the Friday vibes. An old Friday A-list. And JD's Ox Court continues. High bar to clear after playing Gob coming in.
I love that album.
Yeah, me too. We were talking about it the other day. I'm glad I've helped inspire the Ox Court. All that's next. A-list coming up. Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
It's The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Great tunes, JD. 2 for 2.
You know,
killing it.
This choice is always just
fan favorite.
This is a common workout one, but no. Did you guys hear some of the new Kanye stuff that's been coming out here? Like, did you listen to Easy at all? Like the new Kanye song?
No.
Yeah, I listened to it. Okay. Mostly, it was around the Pete Davidson stuff.
That's it. Okay.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
Ailish,
yeah.
If you don't know, in this new song, Easy, Kanye makes a veiled threat towards Pete Davidson. He has a line
it's
about
not
how
veiled. He says he's going to kick his ass.
He's going to kick his ass. Yeah, he does. But it's rap, and it's Kanye, and he's not going to do anything. And I saw a story where Pete Davidson hired more security. I was like, oh, come on, Peter. Like, you can't go sleeping. Well, come on. You can't go sleep with somebody's wife and then also be, like, trying to play the victim card. Like, come on. Like, relax. Especially the way that he did it. And I everyone's kind of laughed at Kanye's expense or done whatever. But, like, he's not divorced. And Pete Davidson's out there just, like, holding hands with this guy's wife and being a public menace. Like, I don't think Pete Davidson's a hero. Let's just put it that way. And I do think that it's a little bit of a sad story that we all just kind of look at it as ha-ha Kanye and, oh, Pete Davidson, he's such a killer. It sucks. Sucks for Kanye. But Kanye, the bigger lyric is that Kanye has another song that he brings the game on a track. And there's a lyric leak from that about Kim, and it is aggressive.
Okay.
And it reminded me that I love the game. Bring back the game. Where's the game been hiding? And so I wanted to play that song today because I just needed some of the game in my life.
Okay. Well,
that
speaking
lyric,
of
though,
games,
if you know it. Boy, oh boy.
I'll be looking
hot.
It up.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of games, a lot of sports-related things here in my A-list.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong. Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
tried really hard to segue that into the A-list.
Yeah, you did it. About a
7 out of 10.
Yeah, 7.2.
Thank you. Another day, another Brad Marchand story. It's been almost 5 for 5 this week. He has just been keeping himself in the news cycle. This one is, he's just so silly. So yesterday he's coming off the ice, home game against the Capitals, which was something I was intrigued in betting, which I did not. So the Bruins take the ice. They come off during the through the tunnel, right? And there's people always hanging over the tunnels. They wanna talk to you. So he grabs someone's phone, just like grabs their cell phone while they're videoing, takes it, and it's just like walks to the dressing room with this random person's cell phone. We have the audio clip. Vic's gonna play that for us now.
Hey, what's up? This is BM63. Just walking off from warm-ups. I don't know whose phone this is, but hope you have a lot of fun tonight, because I know I'm going to. Anyways, gotta go. See ya.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
It's so
brilliant.
Good. It's so good. Hey, it's BM63. Like, what's up, buddy? Yeah, I don't know whose phone. Like, he's just so funny. Like, we got to keep cameras on him, mic him up. But yeah. I thought that was I've never seen another athlete just take somebody's cell phone and give them a little piece of viral content. Imagine being that kid and Marchand takes your phone. You're like,
okay. Is any part of you guys conspiracy theory hatting this one as a plant, though? Because the camera, like the phone is hanging down perfectly. Okay, so no conspiracy thing, because Brad Marchand is having a moment with social media. And I did think the way it was very, you know, calls himself BM63.
I think he's just that quick on the whim. Like, I think he's just so good. Like,
he sees the phone and he grabs it. Or Blake. I'm crazy.
I mean, you're not. Maybe have a little bit of wrestling brain going on here. my issue with saying it was a staged social media event is he didn't plug, like, he said BM63, but all of his socials are BMarch63. So he plugged the wrong thing.
I feel like people can find him regardless.
I know, but, like, Why would you say anything like that if it was staged? Like, you would get your own thing.
Maybe that's what he calls himself.
Then he got hurt in the game, which is
tough karma.
Tough end of this story.
It just, the way the phone was hanging down, the fact that it was recording, how he grabbed it and smoothly transitioned into just him recording himself and knowing that the camera was tilted that way. Yeah, maybe.
Yes. I will say that it was pretty incredible camera skills that he grabbed it, and it must be on it must not be on forward facing camera, because how would that person be able to film it? So it's on the back camera. He picks it up in his glove probably, and is able to hold it at a far enough length that his face is completely in the frame. There is definitely a little bit of luck involved. No, I'm not going to say that it was staged, but I'm going to say that
JD. As long as I have, you know, reasonable doubt, that's all I'm trying to get here.
Yeah, I'm like 38% on board.
38% from zero. This feels like good. What's that play about the jurors, that only one of them 12 believes
Angry
the guy.
Men.
Yes, that's it. 12 Angry Men. That's it. Thank you. 12 Angry Men. This is my situation where, like, I just got A-list kind of on my team here, where it's like, how could they have gotten up the stairs
but
that quickly?
But I do think he could have said, he could have done something cooler. He could have said something more like viral, like, I don't know. He could have done something a little
bit more antagonistic. No, but that's the thing. The viral thing is just grabbing the phone. Here's what I will say, though, too. Phones are disgusting. I would never grab some stranger's phone. Like, phones are,
especially in the COVID era. If he's on, like, COVID protocol next week, it's because he touched this person's phone.
that is, you know what's funny? The thing I'm least scared of is COVID, you know, like on a phone. I'm not about the poop articles. Like, that's what I don't want on the phone.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's way higher up than COVID.
Anyway, so yeah, another day, another Brad Marchand story. We'll see about next week. But he did get injured in that game, so don't know if he'll be back in the lineup. This one's for you, JD.
Yay.
Okay. Yay. Robot umpires have been given a promotion and are one step away from the major leagues this season. So Major League Baseball expanded the automatic strike zone experiment to AAA. right below the MLB. So they're coming. They're coming. I know that you think umpires suck and that you could be a better umpire than anyone in the world. And that
I don't think I know.
You know that, yes. You're definitely very much standing your ground in that one. They're coming. That is a little piece of good news for you, JD. Just hoping that they're 1 year away, maybe. Do you think you'll see them in the MLB next year after this season? Okay.
So I'm a little torn on this, I'm not going to lie, because I actually think that review in professional sports has mostly been a disaster, right? Like, tell me the sporting experience you have right now where review has made it better. NBA games, when they go to the monitor and you have to sit there at the end of a game and some coach's challenge has happened and it's over some obvious just this guy's trying to burn his coaching challenge or they're checking. It's horrific. To me, it's always been a there should just, if you're going to have instant replay, then just give me the egregious sky judge, right? Where there is a bunch of people who are up in a booth somewhere. This is something Ennis floated a long time ago. And they're watching the game. And if something aggressively bad happens, right? I remember there was a Raptors game I was at live once, actually, against the Knicks, where Carmelo Anthony, stepped out of bounds. And he stepped out of bounds. And they ended up winning the game on that possession. It was one where, like, they just could have called it. Like, there was a night and day call, black and white. He stepped out of bounds at the end of a game. Hey, call down the officials and just say, hey, this guy stepped out of bounds. We have it conclusively. We're going to overturn this call. I don't mind that, actually. That type of a sky judge interference on massive plays at the ends of games. But for me, the catch stuff in the NFL, unless it's the sideline, I hate it. You know, I don't like review in the NFL unless it's sideline. I don't like review in the NBA unless it's sideline. Even the NBA stuff where someone strips a ball and then we micro fracture it rolling out of someone's hand. It's like, no.
Like hitting somebody's baby toe. Yeah.
Exactly. Like the baseball player that comes off the bag for a split second and the guy's applying the tag and they rule him out.
Or face-off review in the NHL. I mean, sorry, yes, blue line offside.
Yes.
They need to abolish that.
Review sucks.
It bothers me so much.
Exactly. Review sucks. Unless it's a black and white play that is a sideline or a player that is running to first base, that's another one where I go, okay, fine. Like, I don't mind having this one.
Yeah.
It's been horrible. And the idea that we put robot umpires in, it's not so much that I think that they wouldn't be better at calling the strike zone than obviously, like, some of these guys that are out here. Oof. To me, having the threat of robot umpires, that is the ultimate goal, where it's just, hey, hold these guys a little bit accountable to something, right? Just have the threat. Because there's not a ton of amazing umpires coming up underneath them. They do have incredible unions. But you need some kind of pressure point on umpires to not just be throwing out guys from games, right? And this is the same thing that the NBA needs. Like, I can't remember who it was that got thrown out the other night, but it was a star player over nothing. And I'm thinking, you know how much NBA tickets are? You know, you go to a basketball game and somebody says something to an official and you're going to throw them out of a game? Like, what are you, a clown? Just relax. This isn't about you. And MLB officials, there are too many of them where it's about them. And I hate that. And I really, really do hate that. Where they make calls personal. You can tell after someone has done something how they're going to call a strike zone after there's been somebody. It was Cade. But I'm just over that. I'm just sick of it. But I do love bitching about officials, and I do love bitching at umpires. And now that no one is allowed to complain about players because of this whole, like, oh, they're human beings. Officials are the one safe haven we have left where we can all bitch and complain about them. We can throw garbage at them, and Dak Prescott says it's okay. But so I don't really want robot umpires. But I like the threat of robot umpires, if that makes sense. That was a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
Yes. Sorry. Now it's called the J-List, the JD List.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
It's the name of your memoirs. That was a long answer. Sorry. Yeah, the JD Bunkus story.
I know.
Yes. Don't worry. I should have been prepared that would have been a lengthy rant. What I guess my question, I'm curious, people can text in, is what would be the most difficult sport to be like a ref or a judge in? Because I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. You think it's baseball?
Yeah, surfing, Vic just said, and I agree. Surfing is
surfing. Yeah,
I don't even know. I feel like whoever pushes back, like who's ever at an event, is like that judge robbed us. Like none of you saw. Like none of you saw. Let the drones be the judges. I don't know how they've
So send that in 590. We have some time later in the show to talk about it. What do you think the hardest sport to be a ref or judge or umpire or whatever that term is? Yeah, we're short on time. A quick shout out to my brother.
Which one do you guys think it is quickly?
I don't know. I'm going to think about it.
I think it's basketball because it's just like there's so many plays that you have to call that it's just it's consistently like every trip down the floor.
Lot to watch.
And the speed of the game as well.
That's what I mean. True. It's just it's so fast, and every time there's some kind of contact, and you have star players in your face, like LeBron James is in your face being like, you called that wrong. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, LeBron. You know, like, it's tough. Like, that's a tough one. Hockey, okay, you get quick. To – hockey's the best one because you get to swear back. Like, did you see Sheldon Keefe with that, like, linesman the other night? Keefe is just
he's fired up
them.
All the time. Yeah,
and then that ref just says, shut the bleep up as he's not looking. I'm like, that's fun. I like that. Hockey is the best in terms of the way they interact with one another. And there's no throwing out, right? Like you don't throw out a coach who's swearing at you. Hockey has it right. Other officials got to learn from hockey officials. Like that's the one. That's the one.
Okay, quick shout out to my brother who's listening in an ice hut on a lake in northern Ontario, freezing, and someone else.
I don't like
freezing.
That you go by yourself, Jordan. I don't like it that you go ice fishing by yourself.
He's good. He's listening to the Fan Morning Show out.
Needs an accountability buddy.
Yeah, yes, you do.
He's braving the cold for some fish.